Don't Look Back with Kaz Tran.
You see, I take these glasses off. She looks like a regular person, doesn't she, huh? Put them back on. Formaldehyde face. That's what we got.
That's enough out of you. You get out or I call the cops.
Call the cops? You know what you need? You need a Brazilian plastic surgeon.
I've got one that can see.
Once you spot it, it's like when Roddy Piper had the sunglasses in that movie They Live, you know, and he could see that everybody was an alien when he had those sunglasses on. It's like that. Like, once you spot it, it's so obvious, and you're listening to the radio, and you're like, wow, this person really wanted to talk about something personal and private here and just couldn't work up the nerve to do it, so you wind up getting a line that's completely meaningless.
Right.
And this is how you make yourself call your mother. And this is how you make yourself closer to your brother. Remember him back when he was small enough to help you sing.
Jason Isbell is an artist who approaches songwriting with those Roddy Piper sunglasses on. He sees what needs doing and isn't afraid to go in deep to find the truth and get to the core of each of his songs, whether it be writing to a character that's real or imagined.
And, you know, you don't have to be, it doesn't have to come from a trustworthy narrator, from a first person. You know, you don't have to be the guy in every song.
Yes,
you know?
That's right.
And you even, there's a way to be non-linear without being vague. You know, some songs that I really, really like a lot are narratively indirect, you know, things that don't, it's not point A to point B, this happened and that happened and that happened. You know, some of them are just series of images. And I guess it depends on what you expect from a song, because there's a lot of different kinds of songs. But for me, you know, I think it's important that I reveal those details and those aspects of myself that are a little bit frightening to talk about. I think that's, you know, people want to think that you wrote a song about them. They want to feel like you know something about their lives that you shouldn't know, some kind of secret. Like, how did he know to write this song about me? We've never met. He's just a guy that writes songs. I don't know him. How does he know my life like this? And to do that, you really have to, you have to get to the root of what we have in common. And you know, you have to have those little specific details that to a listener suggest something in their own lives. It might not describe it exactly, but, you know, when you're really invested in listening to a song, you can interpret it in a lot of different ways. And usually the first way that you interpret it is in relation to your own experience. So you bend the details a little bit and you move them around. And, you know, if I say I'm driving a car, the listener might say, well, I was riding in the passenger seat, but it's the same thing. So, you know, it's the more specific you are, I think, the more it means to people.
You thought God was an architect. Now you know he's sitting in a black car ready to go. You made some new friends after the show, but you'll forget their names.
There's so many interesting, very significant shifts in your life and in your career as well, Jason, but I'm hoping we can sort of focus it into one particular song. Was there a song that really spoke to you in a particular time that just still resonates now?
There have been a lot of those over the years, but one that I always wind up going back to, and it was early on for me. I had just really, I was probably, I don't know, 13, 14, 15 years old, and I just begun to combine my favorite things, which were, you know, playing the guitar and reading and you know, writing little stories and poems and things like that. I'd just gotten to a point where I was putting those two together, so it was really the birth of songwriting for me personally. And my mom always listened to people like John Prine, John Hyatt, Bonnie Raitt, James Taylor, a lot of songwriters around the house. And Prine really stuck with me from an early point. I remember Angel from Montgomery, that song I'll talk about, because that one, you know, he begins that song with the line, I am an old woman.
I am an old woman, named after my mother. My old man is another.
child has grown old.
And that was a light bulb for me. I just remember having a moment where I thought, no, you're not. And then, you know, it clicked. And I thought, well, you don't have to be yourself. You can be anybody you want to be in a song. And that really just kind of blew my mind, because, you know, I had gotten tired of writing about myself, and eventually other people would get tired of hearing about it too. And
at 13, at you 13, were tired.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, yeah, I was tired of writing about myself really, really early on.
Wow.
And still am. But, you know, there's a way that John handled that, and the perspective on that song, you know, the beaten down resilience that lives in that character, has to come from John himself. You know, it has to be an aspect of his own character and his own personality. But he's putting it in a completely different setting and a completely untrustworthy first-person narrator that, you know, almost bears no relation to the person who wrote the song and the person who's singing the song. And that blew my mind. It told me all at once, okay, I don't have to tell the truth. You know, in these songs, I don't have to write fiction. I can do something in between. You know, it occurred to me that songs, unlike movies or books, they're not even shelved depending on what's true and what's false. You know, movies, you have documentaries. Well, which songs are documentaries? You know, it doesn't work that way in the record store. And at the same time, your own personality, you can find your way into those songs, because that song is very much John. It's coming from a place that's inside of John. And, you know, Bonnie Raitt did it many years ago and did a really beautiful version of it because it was restrained. And now you hear a lot of, in the States this happens a lot. I don't know if it probably doesn't happen as much over here, but you hear a lot of people covering Angel from Montgomery. Usually it's female singers, because I think they're working off of Bonnie's, you know, original version. Yeah. Not original, but Bonnie's version. And in my opinion, they usually get it wrong, because it's overwrought most of the time, and they try to get bluesy with it. And the lyric itself does all the work for you in that song. Bonnie's delivery of it is very subdued and exhausted, which is exactly what John's delivery of it is. You know, I saw him sing that song a couple weeks ago. I've seen him do it many, many, many times now, and we've become really good friends over the last few years. That's something that I really treasure a whole lot, because he's been a hero of mine for a long time. But that song, when somebody covers it, they overdo it, because they don't usually realize that the lyric has all the blues that you need, you know, all the desperation that you need is contained in that lyric. You don't have to caterwaul about it, you know. John almost just talks his way through it. You know, his delivery is very, very, very laid back and very soft and very subdued and very, very tired. And I think that's the best way for that song to be presented. Mm. Yeah, there's one called Hello in there that he wrote when he was maybe, God, I don't know, 20 or 21 years old, about people who are geriatric, you know, about how there's still a person in there that you know, if you pass an old person on the street, you should try to reach out to them and connect. And it's so far beyond his years that it's almost magical. Like it's almost impossible for somebody that age, I think, to really understand the scope of that. And when he sings it now, you know, being an old man himself, it's pretty beautiful to see how that perspective has stayed the same, but the story surrounding it has changed.
You know that old trees just grow stronger, and old rivers grow wilder every day. Oh, people just grow lonesome.
So the words, obviously, I remember reading your father was very big on words. You must obsess over your lyrics as well.
Mm-hmm.
What is it of the quality of his writing that really struck you?
the fact that he can be so conversational and still be so poignant, I think, that's what really, really appeals to me at the heart of it, you know. And that can even go down to rhyme, like a conversational rhyme. If you feel like you get to the end of a couplet and it rhymes perfectly and you feel like it shouldn't have, you know, I don't know if everybody has that sense sometimes, but when I hear a perfectly rhymed couplet that doesn't sound like the writer had to reach for it, it sounds like it just happened to be an accident that it rhymed, you know?
Yeah,
That I think is really about as good as it gets. And also, you know, things that could be overheard in a bar, you know, not mm-hmm. things that could be overheard in a library at a university, but things that could be overheard in a grocery store, mm-hmm. you know, things that people say every day mm-hmm. that make you stop and look up and have to digest for a little while. That's what really hits me. I like those things, images that are everyday, commonplace images that really, when you put them in the light of a song, they open themselves up to a whole lot of meaning.
Now, I can really hear that now. I'm just listening through to the songs that are on your album. The one particularly that keeps coming up is the one that you write about your mother. And is it also about Amanda's mother?
It is.
She also a young, she was a teen as a
Yeah, yeah,
as
they
a mother.
Both were.
Yeah. And the way you tell that story, you know, feels so natural. You know, it doesn't feel like a complicated story to tell, but there's so much emotion in it, you know, wondering how hard her life must have been and what she gave up,
yeah.
you know, to have you so early that, you know, she was lower than the corn or the height of the corn.
Yeah, she's shorter than the corn. Yeah.
Shorter than the corn.
Yeah, I don't think my mom was done growing yet probably when I was born. Yeah, you know, she was 17 and I think Amanda's mom was 17 or 18 when she was born also. And yeah, it would be a disservice to the subjects if I wrote in floral language about these things. You know, if I wrote something that sounded songwriterly, I think it would be doing a disservice to the people that I'm writing about.
When you were riding on your mother's hip, she was shorter than a corn. All the years you took from her just by being born.
You know, if you're writing a song about, like the title track from Something More Than Free, if you're writing a song about a guy who gets up and goes to work every day, and does hard physical labor, you know, even if that person is imaginary or is built out of multiple people that you know, even if there's not one actual person that you're writing about, you want to be fair to that character, you know, and you don't want to write a song that he's going to hear and think it's highfalutin nonsense, you know. You want him to be able to hear the song that you wrote about him and understand it and agree with it and, you know, not be turned off by the language that you're using. And, you know, that's not to say that people who have that kind of a life don't have high levels of understanding of the language, because they do very much so. But there's a line that you want to walk there. You want to be honest, you know. You don't want to be writing stilted about people who aren't stilted, you know. And I grew up around folks who worked every day, and they said really, really brilliant things all the time, you know. And they were usually made up of two syllable words, and you know, I would sit around and think about the, you know, the little jokes my grandfather made, or you know, when I got older and I was hanging out in bars in Alabama, hearing people drink and complain, and then processing that later on, and thinking, man, that guy has no idea that what he said is just so really genius, you know.
Have you got an example?
Well, okay, here's an example. Like my dad. A lot of his family, if somebody's selling something and they want too much for it, they'll say, he's really proud of that, you know. Like, well, his truck's for sale, but he's really proud of it. And that's code for he wants too much for it. Don't buy his truck, you know. And, yeah, that's one of those things that, I mean, it doesn't go as far as some of those, you know, some of those do. It doesn't have multiple layers, but there's at least a couple of layers there where you're thinking, okay, why don't you just say he wants too much for his truck? And then you realize the culture around that and how Southern people operate. And
there's a level of honor, you know, you don't want to kind of shame people.
Right. Yeah, and then when you get into the purpose of that, too, you get a whole lot more stuff to think about. That I don't know. I like that about certain people's songs, and I think Brian does that just marvelously, just absolutely marvelously. You know, he writes songs that they sound like they could have just slipped out, like he just could have sat down and wrote them in the time it takes to sing them. And you know, I know that's not the case, not at least usually. I know he's somebody who puts work into what he does, but by the time he gets a finished product, it sounds so natural. He makes it sound like anybody could do it when, you know, in truth, that is not the case at all.
There's flies in the kitchen. I can hear them, they're buzzing. And I ain't done nothing since I woke up today. I'm a hell kind of person. Go to work in the morning.
Jason Isbell, taking us deep into his songwriting processes and influences. Don't Look Back is produced by me, Kaz Tran. I hope you've been getting a kick out of hearing these stories. If so, please rate and review and let me know what you think. For more from your past, present and future, head to doublej.net.au. Next week on Don't Look Back, comedian Arj Barker.
I mean, everyone wants to kind of be cool. I mean, almost everyone, even people that say they don't want to be cool, that's their way of being cool. Even anti-cool is like, is in a way kind of, I'm too cool to be cool.
For more songs that changed it all, subscribe now to Double J's Don't Look Back podcast.